there, America, and we're back. I'm Leslie Marshall. Welcome or welcome back to the only true democracy on talk radio of, for, and by you, the people. My guest tonight is Mark Levine. We are going to talk about Treasury Secretary Geithner's plan, AIG. And, you know, Mark is a good friend of the program. He is kind enough to fill in for me very often when I am out of town on vacation or at a conference, et cetera. Mark is a host himself, host of the Washington, D.C. radio talk show, The Inside Scoop. He serves up all the news the government does not want you to know. And by the way, you can check out his website. You can check him out and you check out his show online as well. It is www.radioinsidescoop.com. Mark, always a pleasure, my love. How are you? Hello, Mark. Hello, Mark.
Can you hear me now? Hello.
Hello, Mark.
Can you hear me? Can you not hear me?
I can hear you now, but I can't hear you. My producers are talking to me in my ear
because
it mutes you.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Leslie.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Mark. You know, they say the third time's a charm, and I'm glad to have you with us
on the third. You can hear me now. There we go.
on the third hello. I do want folks to know that, well, I'll tell you folks a bit more about you a little bit later. Let's talk about the Treasury Secretary. There was talk that Geithner should resign. There was talk that this was a wrong choice by the president. I was thinking that myself. Now he's getting some kudos from Wall Street. Let's talk about him and his economic plans in general, and then we'll focus a bit on AIG.
Sure. I think Treasury Secretary Geithner is the classic wonk. This is a guy who, he is. He doesn't have much of a personality, and he's not that good on the public stump, but this guy understands what few in the world understand, which is this complex derivative market that brought down our economy. And I think that he's got an incredible knowledge. I think he's brilliant. I think he's got an incredibly difficult challenge ahead of him with, frankly, no good options. No option is good, but he, I think, is picking his way through the least bad options, and I give him credit. I think he's doing a pretty good job, having been dealt a very bad hand.
Why has he been dealt such a bad hand? One of the concerns I had, Mark, is this guy can't keep track of what taxes he pays. How is he going to keep track of America's money and straighten that out? Come on.
Well, I can't forgive him for that. And obviously, though I should say that it was it's sort of an ambiguous thing with his payments from the IMF. But no, there's no excuse for that, and I'm not going to defend that. But I would rather talk about the broader economy and the hand he was dealt. And it all has to do basically with unregulated gambling by AIG and a bunch of other big banks. Before 1997, there was no such thing as a credit default swap. No one had heard of it. It didn't exist. And then some enterprising trader at J.P. Morgan created this thing. And, of course, what it is it's an insurance contract that can't call itself an insurance contract, because if it did, it would be regulated as an insurance contract, and then you couldn't do all that gambling that you want to do with it. Maybe I should explain to the listeners who don't understand it, because I certainly didn't understand it.
I think it's a good idea, because most people don't have the guts, quite frankly, especially. Most people don't have the guts to say, I don't really get it. I don't really get how it works, so I think it's good that you explain.
Well, no, I think people should understand it, not because they'd ever want to do one, but because, heck, they brought down the entire economy. Let's find out what this thing is. Insurance. I guess I should go back. Back to the Great Depression. After the run on banks in the 1930s, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, as part of his New Deal, created a very, very good institution called the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC. And that means that when you put money in a bank, as long as you keep it under their maximum, which used to be $100,000, now it's $250,000, you cannot lose money in your bank. And the FDIC has paid insured depositors every single penny. That's why we don't have runs on banks. That's why, even though we've had massive bank failures, Indy Mac and Washington Mutual.
Mark, I got to jump in. I would disagree with you there. I have a friend who lost a lot of money with Indy Mac Bank and did not get the money that the government promised as of yet.
Did your friend have under $100,000 in deposits? Because I'm quite convinced that if he had under
The argument, as you probably are aware, Mark, and some banks weren't specific, is it $100,000 per account or $100,000
yes.
total? And whose name is on the account and what happens with joint accounts?
Wait,
Mark, we got to take a break. Mark, you know this job. We got
to
take a break. Hang on. We'll take a break. We'll be right back with our guest. Mark Levine is in the house, in the Great. We're coming up right now. Check out his website, www.radioinsidescoop.com. Check ours out as well, www.lesliemarshallshow.com. I am she, your host, back right after this.
Can't believe she said that? Check out what else she said. www.lesliemarshallshow.com.
We're back. Leslie Marshall here. Welcome or welcome back to the only true democracy in talk radio, streaming live at www.lesliemarshallshow.com. I am your host. The number to join us in this hour and talk with our guest, Mark Levine. We're talking about AIG, talking about the economic stimulus package, and talking about the guy in charge of it all, Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner. Pick up the phone and join us. You might have questions. You might have comments. You might have concerns. You may agree or disagree with our guest. He is a host. I'll tell you about him in a show so he can handle it. 888-6-LESLIE is the number. 888-653-7543. Mark Levine, our guest in this hour, is host of the Washington, D.C. radio talk show, The Inside Scoop, serving up all the news the government does not want you to know. And I love anybody who's telling us something somebody else doesn't want us to know. He's an ex-congressional attorney. He served the Democrats on both the judiciary, God, my New England tongue, and Homeland Security committees. He not only is able to understand, but also can explain, as you hear him doing right now, with what happened on Wall Street and why we're in this mess, this bailout, this caca, how Washington really works. And he fought in some of the great battles of the early Bush administration. You can hear him on his show, The Inside Scoop, where he podcasts every day at www.radioinsidescoop.com. Mark, thanks for holding. Welcome back, buddy. He also fills in for me. He's a friend of mine, personally and professionally, and a friend of the show. And, Mark, a pleasure to have you with us. You, before I cut you off, we're saying and explaining to the people, we all can blame J.P. Morgan, right, for the gambling game.
Well, and all the Wall Street execs. I mean, this thing started as a very small thing and grew. As I was saying before the break, the FDIC protects banks and bank depositors up to the insured limit. You have the SIPC, which protects investors up to a higher limit. But insurance companies, they don't have these kind of federal protections. You may be surprised to know, some of our listeners may be surprised to know, there is no federal regulatory body over insurance companies at all. There are state insurance regulators. And the reason for that is that insurance companies generally, they reinsure, they go to some foreign insurers like Lloyd's of London and so forth, and they generally pay you if you suffer a loss. You know, your house burns down or you wreck your car. And so people don't usually gamble with insurance. I mean, after all, if you burn your house down, you can be charged with insurance fraud, but generally all you do when you get insurance is you get paid for what you would have lost anyway. Well, some bright person, and it began in the securities market, but it went to this big insurance company, AIG, decided that you also need insurance against default, credit default. And that, in and of itself, isn't a real problem. The idea is that if this big bank doesn't pay you back, if this loan doesn't come through, if this securitized subprime mortgage thing doesn't work out, and you think it might not, you want insurance company to protect you. So AIG started selling these insurance contracts that began at J.P. Morgan but was used by this big insurance company. But what they did is they didn't call it insurance, because if they called it insurance, it would be regulated by these state insurance companies. They'd have to have reserves to back it up. People would have to suffer a loss, and you'd have all these regulators watching what they were doing. They decided to call it a swap. A swap, kind of like a swap meet or a barter. A cute name. It's not a name that had ever been used before in the financial industry. And what they were swapping was what looked like an insurance contract. In other words, you pay an amount each year. Some might call them premiums, but we won't, because then it would be regulated. And you're paid in the event of something happening. Some might call that insurance, but we won't, because then you'd be regulated. And so they started swapping these things. And they actually went further and said, you don't even have to suffer a loss. You can bet on somebody else. kind of like betting on the Super Bowl. You don't have to have anything to do with it. Your house doesn't have to burn down. You can bet on someone else's house burning down. You can bet on Citibank not paying its assets back. You can bet on these security subprime mortgages not paying back. And a whole bunch of people started making these side bets. They said, well, we don't think anyone's ever going to pay these things back. So the bets, the side bets, turned out to be even bigger than the whole subprime mortgage crisis. So then when you had this spark, and again, the subprime mortgage crisis is not the cause of our problems. It is merely the spark. The problem is this gasoline, these credit default swaps, this unregulated side betting by a company, AIG, that happens to insure one-third of all businesses in the United States. You had an insurance company, and they were going gambling. They were going to Vegas. And that, in essence, is what brought the whole thing down.
Dumb question, Mark, and there are two different businesses. But, you know, didn't Bill Gates get called into to question by the U.S. government regarding monopolizing a business or an industry? Wouldn't one-third of an industry be considered, well, I guess it's not considered a monopoly because it's not a majority, but are there any kind of restrictions or regulations that stop an AIG from owning a majority? Because, as you know, in broadcasting, you can't, although they do. They just combine companies, you know, and in the case of Bill Gates and other companies, you can't either.
Well, you're absolutely right to raise monopoly law, and, of course, 100 years ago with the Sherman Antitrust Act, we started breaking up the big monopolies, you know, the big oil companies, Standard Oil and railroad companies and so forth. AIG has competitors. You can only break up a monopoly not for being too large, but for pushing out competition. Each of us could probably name 10 insurance companies right off the bat. Now, AIG tended to do not auto and home insurance, although those are the examples I gave. They tended to do catastrophic things, an oil rig failing, a plane crashing, those kind of huge things that you need.
But they also do have medical insurance, and I know that because my husband's a physician, and we did have some patients that had saw him that had AIG private insurance, or their employer had AIG as their insurance for work comp injuries.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. While current monopoly law doesn't stop them, they are huge. In its essence, they're like a monopoly. They are in one-third of every business in America. And this is precisely why they could gamble so much, because they knew that if they messed up, and they did, they could go to someone like the Federal Reserve and say, you can't let us fail. We are too big to fail. We don't have an FDIC. We don't have an SIPC. And you can't even make us declare bankruptcy. If we declare bankruptcy, then we could shave off the bonuses to the executives. Then we could pay these foreign banks, you know, 50 cents on the dollar. But sorry, we're too big to fail. If we fail, the whole economy collapses, so you got to pay us off. And the real scandal is not what the executives took. I mean, that's scandalous, but it's small fry compared to the tens of billions of dollars that went through AIG to banks all around the globe, to Deutsche Bank and Crédit Agricole, which is a French bank, to Goldman Sachs. That's really where all the money went, to these banks that made these bad bets.
I want to ask you about, some people are saying that if we own approximately 80% of AIG, if the federal government's bailing out the whole banking industry, why not just go back to the Federal Reserve running things, nationalizing our banking system?
Well, it's an interesting question, and some say that that's the right way to go. In fact, Paul Krugman strongly believes in that. Then, of course, you have the prospect of the government running the thing, which some may run it well, some may not run it well. It really wouldn't solve all the problems. I mean, again, with the banks, there are ways to take over. We have the FDIC, and that can do that, and they are doing that for banks. But for this insurance company, there isn't even a law to allow us to do that. What the Fed did in taking over 80% of AIG was extraordinary. It used Depression-era legislation that hadn't been used since the Great Depression. And no one really expected it to happen. What Tim Geithner is looking for right now, and I think he's looking for absolutely the right thing, is a way to deal with insurance companies and hedge funds and other things that are unregulated but are too big to fail, to have someone to look over this kind of systemic risk to the economy. No business should ever be too big to fail. And if it happens, we should be able to break it up, even if it's not a monopoly, or at least we should be able to regulate it and watch it carefully, because you never want a business to be able to be too big to fail.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we continue with our guests, but we also want to hear from you tonight, folks. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. If you have a question regarding all of this, regarding what is ahead for Treasury Secretary Geithner, his plan, and specifically the plan regarding AIG, give us a call. I'm Leslie Marshall, your host. Mark Levine is our guest, also host of the Washington, D.C. radio talk show, The Inside Scoop. You can check out his show at www.radioinsidescoop.com. And check out our website. We're streaming live at www.lesliemarshallshow.com. We'll be back to you. Here's the number to join us, 888-6-LESLIE. One more segment after this break. So if you have a question or comment, join us now, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Back right after this.
Leslie Marshall, the simple truth in a complicated world. Give her a call now at 888-6-LESLIE. Want to listen to Leslie's deeper thoughts? Enter at your own risk. Check out her blog at www.lesliemarshallshow.com.
And we're back. Mark Levine, our guest, host of the Washington, D.C. radio talk show, The Inside Scoop. Only with us a few more minutes, folks. If you have a question or a comment, agree or disagree with what we're chatting about, talking about Treasury Secretary Geithner's plan and AIG, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Mark Levine, host of The Inside Scoop. Check it out at www.radioinsidescoop.com. Mark, I want to know, some people might say it's hypocrisy to lambast Wall Street, bail them out with billions, complain about how they're using the money, specifically AIG bonuses, and then sit down and have a conversation saying, please help me. And that's how I think some people are viewing what the president's doing. Please help our listeners to understand what your take is on that. Because, I mean, he's been bashing the banks. He's been bashing Wall Street. Now he's going to meet with them and say, hey, let's work together on this, or I need your help.
Well, Wall Street should have an appropriate dose of humility. The greed by a relatively small number of people has led to a terrific worldwide recession, the greatest one since the Great Depression of the 1930s. Wall Street should have a bit of humility. He's absolutely right to bash the banks. I think a lot of people think he hasn't bashed them enough. Most of the criticism I've heard of Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner, in fact, is that he could be a lot harsher. The Obama administration is quietly saying that maybe we shouldn't be taxing 90% of those bonuses, which is a bill, actually, I support. You know, when people, to me, it's kind of like you've got a child, and they get drunk, and they let loose, and they break everything in your house. And then you scream at them, and then you ask them to help put it back together. I think that's perfectly fair and appropriate, and anyone that's too arrogant on Wall Street to help put back together what they themselves messed up is, let's just say, a bit too arrogant for my taste.
I hear you, and I agree with the arrogance, but is it a problem that the president's going to sit down with people who, quote, screwed up and are so arrogant to help him in this economic time of such a bad recession and to boost the economy?
I don't think it's a problem because, listen, Wall Street is not one person, it's not 10 people. Anyone who wants to make money will get back in this. If someone doesn't want to help, there'll be someone else to help. The whole idea behind his program of buying up toxic assets is to limit some of the liability if the things go down and to allow people to make profits if it goes up. This is quite a deal, and I would think that many investors will jump at the chance. And, you know, his wagging his finger at them won't affect them one iota. They care a lot more about money than they do about insults.
So the, you know, the American people complained all they wanted to. I was one of them. And it didn't work. Government's still bailing out. Obviously, bailout didn't work or isn't starting to work now, wasn't starting to work. Some of these companies, AIG, for example, came back and said, need more cash. Let the bonuses go through. What now is the plan with AIG? I was watching Senator Bernie Sanders on Bill Maher last night, and I agreed almost 100% with what he said. There are some Americans that think, you know, it's a day late and more than a dollar short, $165 million short in dealing with the AG and the bonuses. And some people think we've got to move on like the president and not get stuck in a rut and focus there. But is the taxation at a 90% level acceptable? And why the hell is owners of that company? Because technically, if you own a majority of a company, majority of stocks in a company, you don't have to be a board member to say, hey, no bonuses, or we want them back, or take the money back, or we tax you at 100%.
Well, the problem is these bonuses were already promised prior to the government taking over the company.
Yeah, but if you own a company, Mark, and I take it over and you promised your employees thing, I could say, well, you know, your SOL, that was his promise, not mine. I don't care if you have it in writing, sue me.
Actually, well, you can't do that. You could do it, and I could sue you, and I'd probably win. Now, of course, this is an extraordinary
situation. But you wouldn't win. You wouldn't win. I've just been bailed out by the government, so my books can show you that I entered or practically entered into bankruptcy. You can't bleed a rock.
Ah, well, see, that's the question. See, if they had declared bankruptcy, you're absolutely right. You could ignore the contract, say, sorry, new owners, you're out of here. But without entering into bankruptcy, the company still exists, and by law, by Connecticut law, is required to pay off these contracts. Now, that doesn't mean you can't get them back.
But don't you think they'd have people waiting outside with weapons and lynching materials for people bitching and moaning and griping about bonuses? A bonus of 400 people griping about $165 million, when many of them are making millions per year anyway and have? For years?
Well, I think we're right to gripe. What I'm saying is the way to get it back is through extraordinary means. For example, the populist uprising has already caused many of those executives to return their bonuses voluntarily or under a lot of pressure. You can call that voluntarily. And even the House bill, which I support, to tax 90% of the bonus, that's a great way to get them to pay it back. Under ordinary contract law, we'd probably lose. But these are extraordinary times, and they require extraordinary remedies.
Interesting. What do you think is the biggest misconception? Well, wait, let's get back to Geithner. So, you know, is this guy doing a good job? Are we going in the right direction under his lead with this? I mean, you know, many Americans may not know. What does a Treasury Secretary actually do? Because in our little PTA meetings in schools for most of us, Joan and Jane and John Q. Publix, that person is counting how many dollars we have in the box from the bake sale.
I think it's fair to say until last year, no one knew who the Treasury Secretary was under any of the presidents.
Very true.
Usually do that much. Frankly, the Federal Reserve usually does a lot more. But in extraordinary times, the Treasury Secretary has extraordinary powers, and he's seeking even more powers. And their powers, frankly, I'm willing to give him the power to wind down a non-bank business that's too big to fail. And I think he's doing a good job under very, very difficult circumstances. I may be the only one defending Tim Geithner.
He's doing a good job, you say. But, you know, Mark, there are people out there that are saying he's doing a good job, you know, with our money. That's his job. But really, Wall Street being resurrected with taxpayer money, how long does this go on? And what if they hit a bump? Will there be yet another bailout? And what if it all fails and goes south because these people mismanage our funds and their funds in their company once before? Why wouldn't it happen again? I mean, by the way, this is not, and the bonus issue with AIG is not just about these bonuses, Mark. It's about $25,000 spa weekends at Monarch Beach
and
Dana Point. It's about these people after the bailout planned a lavish party and weekend retreat getaway, and when they got caught, pulled back. So Americans not only don't trust the government fully, Americans certainly don't trust Wall Street fully, don't trust really rich people fully, don't trust AIG fully, and I as an American and a taxpayer, don't blame them. I'm in on it with them. I really think this is a slimy bunch, and I feel that we should have let AIG go south, because honestly, I don't think we can get much lower in this economy than we've been.
Well, they are a slimy bunch, and that's the feeling of a lot of people. And, you know, I kind of see it as AIG and the rest of the people who are gambling on Wall Street gave this country a ticking time bomb, like terrorists. And they said, hey, and only we can unravel this thing. But given that AIG is in one-third of every American business, given that they are an insurance company, people couldn't do their business. They couldn't run their oil rig. They couldn't put planes up in the air because if the thing collapses, they don't have insurance on it, which is why insurance companies shouldn't be doing this kind of gambling to begin with. And so the problem was they were too big to fail, or were deemed too big to fail. And when Lehman Brothers, a much, much smaller company, failed, it sent shockwaves through the financial system. It you know, sent the stock market going down. It hastened the recession we're in. And AIG is a much, much bigger actor. So The government said, we think they're too big to fail. But the most important thing, I think, is that we fix it for the future. We make sure this can never happen again. We pass laws to
but
make
fixing
sure
fixing it for the future
no
does not ensure fixing it for the future, Mark. I hear you and I agree with that. But we don't have a crystal ball and we don't have a guarantee, especially dealing with companies that have a negative track record. Come on, Mark. We would have a few months ago entrusted our money with Bernie Madoff much more than we would entrust the government bailing out AIG.
Well, those people at least have been fired. Many of them are living high in the hog, I should say, which is why I support what Schumer calls clawback. I mean, I want to go after Joseph Cassano living up high on the hog in London. He's the guy that got him all involved in the products, and not even the people that are there at AIG now. I definitely want to get the people who caused this. But first, I think you spill a glass of milk, you right the glass, and then you clean up the milk. I think we've got to right this economy. That should be our primary focus. I have no problem with the 90% tax. I have no problem with clawbacks. I have no problem getting these people. The really scary thing, though, Leslie, is I want to see these people in jail, but we can't put them in jail because the horrific stuff they did was legal. And that is the real scandal.
Oh, perfect post there. All right, my buddy Mark Levine is in the house tonight. Appreciate you being with us this hour. Do check out his program, The Inside Scoop. It is at www.radioinsidescoop.com. Mwah, Mark, you know I love you. Very nice guy. Really adore him. I'm Leslie Marshall, Right Wing Wacko, Hour 2. Your calls, opinions, comments, questions, and concerns coming up right after this. Don't go away. Democracy in Talk Radio of, for, by you, the people. We are live nationwide, streaming live at www.lesliemarshallshow.com. Check it out. Mark Levine is a good buddy of mine, and he fills in for me sometimes. He has his own show. He's a guest here tonight. It's a pleasure to have him with us, and I'll tell you a bit about him later. You've heard before, and if you're new to the program, Mark is host of the Washington, D.C. radio talk show, The Inside Scoop, serving up all the news the government does not want you to know. And we'll tell you more about him. You can also check his program out, and I hope you will, at radioinsidescoop.com. He podcasts every day. Hey, how are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Other than the fact I've been passed over for a second time by MSNBC for a national television show, but hey, they say the third time's a charm.
Me too. What's with that?
I don't know. I live in L.A. where they tell me you have to be halfway decent looking, too. And, you know, it's like, okay, I've lost all this weight after the baby. You know, I'm killing myself. But that's not what we're talking about. You know, let's talk about G20. You know something? You're going to laugh, but this is true, and I'm not being melodramatic, I swear. I was driving in the car today to an appointment, and I was listening on NPR somewhere that was doing like a BBC broadcast of G20. And they talked about how historical today might be in the future looking back on this day. For the first time in a long time, there were 20 world leaders standing on one stage in agreement about the economy, what to do about it, and pledging to work together to get it done. When the BBC person talked about this, I honestly, I'm a little of a clump right now. When the BBC person talked about this, I honestly had tears in my eyes. Because what they talked about, they talked about how much of an impact a change in leadership in America had to do with all of this, and how presidential Barack Obama looked and sounded and was perceived as, and I honestly feel, Mark, it's almost as if overnight the world is looking at America differently.
Well, of course, there was a G20 meeting just 5 months ago when George Bush was still president. And this is a fairly new idea. I mean, the G7 usually met, the top seven industrial nations. But the idea to have 20 to include, Russia and China and some of the other nations that are not Western nations but play a major role in the economy was really the French president's idea, Sarkozy. And they had Bush in November, and really nothing was accomplished. And so,
gee, I'm so surprised at that. I'm so surprised, Mark. We know how much he accomplished in the past 8 years.
Exactly. Exactly. But it was, the press, I think, magnified the differences. They talked about the French and the Germans as mostly being concerned about more regulation and President Obama being mostly concerned about more surplus. And there were those differences, but at the end of the day, they weren't that strong. I mean, you're absolutely right. There was mostly agreement. And it's more like surplus now and fix the regulation problem later.
Let's talk about the $1 trillion. We're gonna take a break because if I ask you this, it's going to take me longer than the time we have left before the break to ask the question. So we'll be back with our buddy Mark Levine. I certainly hope you'll join in. You may want to know, what is this G20 all about, this economic summit? What are these leaders doing? What kind of regulations are they backing that are being called tougher? And where's this $1 trillion coming from to stimulate economic conditions and economies throughout the world? 8886-LESLIE is the number. Pick up the phone and join us with your questions, your comments, your opinions, your concerns, agree or disagree. And if you have questions, Mark is the guy to ask. Mark Levine is our guest. We will be talking with him and with you after this break. I'm Leslie Marshall. Check out the website during the break. That's LeslieMarshallShow.com. Our number, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Back to our guest, Mark Levine, and you right after this. Don't go away.
The Leslie Marshall Show. Truth and common sense fused together for you. Call her now at 888-6-LESLIE. Want to listen to Leslie's deeper thoughts? Enter at your own risk. Check out her blog at www.lesliemarshallshow.com.
Marshall here. Welcome or welcome back to the only true democracy in talk radio of for by you the people. 888-6-LESLIE is the number. That's 888-653-7543. Streaming live at LeslieMarshallShow.com. Another site I'd like you to check out is RadioInsideScoop.com. There is a podcast hosted by Mark Levine. It is the Washington, D.C. radio talk show, The Inside Scoop, serving up all the news the government does not want you to know. Mark is an ex-congressional attorney serving the Democrats on the Judiciary and Homeland Security Committees, not only able to understand and explain how Washington really works. He fought in some of the great battles of the early Bush administration. So check out his website where he podcasts every day at RadioInsideScoop.com. And Mark is our guest in this hour. We are talking about the G20 summit. Mark, let's talk about some of those questions I posed to our listeners before the break. And, you know, let's talk first of all about these regulations that are being backed by all 20 of the G20 leaders and why they're considered tougher.
Well, you know, what's interesting about the regulations is in Europe and throughout the rest of the world, they're largely blaming us for this economic crisis, and they've got some reason to. It was largely the fact that the United States didn't regulate these credit derivative swaps that we've talked about. Basically, we regulate banks, but we don't regulate insurance companies when they're selling insurance but not calling it insurance. And so everyone exploited that loophole. What's fascinating about it is it wasn't just American companies and brokerage firms, places like Goldman Sachs, they exploited the loophole. It was the Europeans, too. Deutsche Bank and Societe Generale and Credit Lyonnais and these banks actually ended up making billions through American taxpayers because they exploited the loophole, too. So here you have the Europeans complaining about American lack of regulation with some justification, but they did pretty good by it because when we bailed out our banks, we ended up bailing them out, too.
I also want to know about this money, and I know a lot of people do, because, you know, a lot of people feel uncomfortable saying, hey, I don't get it, or, you know, I don't understand. People understand as taxpayers a bailout within America. But how does this work when you have 20 nations and 20 leaders and a $1 trillion, price tag to stimulate world economy? Does that money come from American taxpayers? How much of that $1 trillion stimulus does America contribute to or American taxpayers contribute to?
Well, there's actually a breakdown there. There's, first of all, each of the individual countries are pledging to do more to stimulate their economy. Going into this conference, France and Germany were far more reluctant to spend money to stimulate their economies. They argued that they had a more socialist economy, that they took care of their poor already, so they didn't need extra money to stimulate the economy. So largely, a lot of this is national funds. Now, there is the International Monetary Fund, and that is like the World Bank, although there's another institution called the World Bank, which is confusing to people. They basically do pretty much the same thing. What they do is they serve as the bank for nations. Like when a country is in trouble, Iceland, for example, their entire bank system went collapsed after because of our system. And so they come in and save nations, and that needs money. And so we're going to contribute some tens of billions of dollars. But they actually get money from all over the world. In fact, Japan has promised to contribute $100 billion. So there's both an international component and a national component to this money.
The president called it a turning point in our pursuit of global economic recovery. Is it? Because, you know, when there's photo ops, they say a lot of things, and people go back to their own countries and stick their middle finger at each other sometimes.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's a good question. I don't know the answer. One of the things that Sarkozy wanted that the Americans were very reluctant on, and you can understand why, is he wanted an international regulatory body. And that all sounds well and good, but there aren't too many international institutions where American presidents want to subject our sovereignty to that. Mm-hmm. And so it's one thing to have world cooperation. We're all for that. But American presidents, even President Obama, who's very much someone who is a globalist, is concerned when you have some international institution controlling America. And yet at the same time, you can understand why the Europeans or the Asians want that, because after all, it was largely our lack of regulation that got us in this mess to begin with.
Now, Great Britain's Gordon Brown says the leader's plan includes job creation, stronger financial controls. Let's talk about each of those separately. Job creation, that's great, but a lot of Americans have the perception that have lost their jobs to countries overseas, such as China or India, that we are creating lots of jobs overseas. And how is the world going to help America create jobs here?
Well, I don't know the world will help us create jobs in that way. I mean, that is largely the domestic stimulus package that President Obama pushed through Congress just a month or so ago. That's largely what's going to create jobs in the United States. At the international level, they're mostly concerned about protectionism. They're concerned about barriers to trade. And, you know, whenever you have an economic crisis, countries are very much likely to say, well, we'll protect our own industry perhaps at the expense of another country's industry. And in the 1930s, that led to everyone being protectionist and also led to extreme poverty, Great Depression, and the rise of fascist regimes. So the idea is, at the very least, we'll have free trade. Now, part of the problem, as you point out, Leslie, is that, you know, when we have free trade with countries like China and India that have labor costs at much, much less than ours, they can out-compete us, and we get jobs sort of shipped over to India. One of the things that they're trying to work in the G20 is to devalue, I know, the Chinese currency, which isn't traded on the free market, because it's overvalued, and that means that basically they can sell their exports cheaper to us than we can sell to them.
When we also hear about the regulation of the financial industry, do you think conservatives are just going to be like, this is more than socialism, it's communism on a world level?
Well, it is. I mean, you know, the conservatives are always scared about some sort of national world government. And to some extent, their fear is justified, because France has always looked to have some kind of international world government. President Sarkozy, in fact, talked about having some kind of world governance. But I'm not afraid that President Obama will fall into that trap. Basically, as long as we have international cooperation and international standards, for example, if you have an international standard that says any hedge fund that has more than, say, $10 million will be regulated. That's an international standard. Each country can do it in their own way. That's sort of an international standard that everyone can protect. But when you say, oh, we're going to have an international financial standards board that's going to look into everything and is going to tell countries what to do, that's the kind of thing that makes most Americans queasy, and not just conservatives.
There's so much. I want to talk about Obama, because you know you did talk about Bush. Certainly, America's reputation has to be changed. How has Obama done that in just today's meeting? And by the way, what a foray into the world as his first trip as president abroad, meeting with leaders, of the top nations in the world.
You know,
all at one time.
A lot of what President Obama is doing is mostly behind closed doors. Oh, sure, they go out and take photo ops and everything, but the real meetings, the real agenda, we'll probably find out over the next few days. I think the person that's making the real worldwide impression is Michelle Obama. There's a lot of talk with her in Great Britain, her meeting with the Queen, her going to a British girls' school and actually crying at one point because she was so moved by the girls there. She, I think, is being a really good ambassador. I don't talk about first ladies a lot, but
by the way, Mark, it's good that you mentioned this because I think a lot of people, if they remember their history and think back, it was Jacqueline Kennedy that made such an impression on France and not John F. Kennedy, so much so that he said, I'm Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy's husband.
You're absolutely right, Leslie, and I think in many ways Michelle is making the bigger impression to the people than Barack Obama is. He's obviously making the impression to the world leaders.
Well, I heard on the BBC today that they're having an Obama love fest with this family in England. They're just absolutely they're just like loving him, and this can do nothing but good for America.
Well, they've always loved him. I mean, John McCain used to mock Barack Obama for going to Germany and speaking Berlin before 250,000 people, and they loved him more overseas than here. You know, Europe has been looking for a change for a long time. There's been 8 long years of Bush. I remember people saying to me, Europeans, that they lost respect for America because they couldn't believe that we had this guy. And I remember in the first 4 years, I'd say, well, we didn't choose him. You know, it was the Supreme Court. Don't blame us. But then came 2004, and it was less, it was harder to defend America. They've been looking. I think that most people, certainly in Europe, definitely to a lesser extent in China or Russia, but certainly in Western Europe, people want to like America. They like to have that strong tie across the Atlantic, and they just couldn't feel it under Bush. And here you have President Obama. He comes in. He's closing Guantanamo. He's ending torture. He's really changing the whole image of America around the globe.
What do you mean he's ending?
Right,
Mark, what do you mean he's ending torture? Torture? Don't you remember George Bush said we don't torture in America?
yeah, we don't torture. We don't ever call it.
No, Mark, you know what I was saying yesterday? We were talking about this. You know what I said is, no, we don't torture in America. We torture in Cuba, Afghanistan, Iraq, Morocco. Mark, hang on. We'll be back with you in a second, sweetie. We're going to take a break. We are going to continue with our guests. We'd love to hear from you, though. This is your program of For and By You, the People. When we're having a conversation like this and, it's an interview, you're welcome to join us. You're welcome to throw in your questions. I can't read your mind and ask everything everyone's thinking out there. So pick up the phone and join us. Mark Levine is our guest. And as I mentioned to you, he's host of the Washington, D.C. radio talk show, The Inside Scoop, serving up all the news the government does not want you to know. You can hear him podcasting daily at RadioInsideScoop.com. We're going to take a break. I'm Leslie Marshall. Pick up the phone and join us. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Also, check out our website during the break, LeslieMarshallShow.com. Answer our poll question, add to the thread in our blog. You can send us an email, but we'd love you to call it as a talk show. Also, check out a former radio broadcast on our podcast feature and as well former television appearances. I got one coming up next Tuesday on Fox and Friends on Fox News Channel. We'll take a break. I'm Leslie Marshall. Don't go away.
Want to listen to Leslie while you're surfing the web? Visit www.lesliemarshallshow.com and click on the Hear Leslie microphone to hear the show streaming.
Marshall here with Mark Levine, host of the Washington, D.C. radio talk show, The Inside Scoop. Check it out at RadioInsideScoop.com, where he podcasts live every day. These are challenges the G20 leaders are certainly talking about with the economy. A lot of this is talk, and we talked about how people go, back to their own countries, and obviously everybody cares about their own country, Mark. What should Americans take away from what they witnessed with the president coming out for the photo ops now and then from those closed-door meetings and these, leaders throughout the world agreeing to move forward to fix the economy, create jobs, have tougher financial regulations, et cetera?
I think you should take away that America is back, that we're no longer the world pariah, that obviously the world won't necessarily agree with everything that our president proposes, but that they want to. they're looking to agree. They want to be accepting of Barack Obama. Frankly, it's extremely unlikely that any of those European countries could ever have a non-white premier. And I think they're a little stunned that we Americans actually elected Barack Obama, and there's a whole new image of America in the world. So I think he's got a lot of respect. He pushed for stimulus, and they pretty much agreed to do what he said. And I think it's a real win for Barack Obama and for our world relationship.
Mark, thank you for taking the time. I know that you have an appointment this evening, an engagement this evening. Anyway, but
I do.
I know you're cheating on me. I know you're cheating on me tonight, but it's okay. Yeah, you're cheating on me tonight, but it's okay. I'm letting you.
I'm not in the same place. So.
Well, have a wonderful evening. Seriously, thank you for taking the time, sweetheart.